Olympics, been there. The best countries. If it's Cuba, I beat them. If it's Russia, I beat them. If it's Mexico, I beat them.
And it sucks that a YouTuber's gonna take all
and
that
away
from you.
And guess what? I fight real.
It's Pokemon collecting podcasting host that does YouTube. I fight about to beat the greatest history fighter of all time.
I fight real fighters.
History fighters?
So guess what? I'm willing to fight both in the same night.
That is the unbowed and undefeated Floyd Mayweather Jr., one of the most skilled and most noxious boxers ever, addressing a fighter who is, by any standard, unreal. Logan Paul. That this pay-per-view bout is even happening this weekend between one of boxing's all-time greats and a YouTube star says so much about an ancient sport and the current attention economy. And yes, all of us. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, June 4th. This is ESPN Daily. Ben, thank you so much for joining me, man.
Thank you so much for having me, Pablo.
Ben Baby has been covering boxing for 15 years, and he's currently on That Beat and the Cincinnati Bengals for ESPN. I gotta admit something, man. Like, this is an episode I am pretty conflicted about. It's an episode that part of me thinks we should not touch with a 50-foot pole, and the other part of me is the guy who pitched it and insisted on having you on the show today. Floyd Mayweather, one of the greatest boxers we have ever seen, is making his return to the ring. He hasn't fought since 2017. He is 50-0, Ben. As a professional boxer, it's very clear that he is so much better than his opponent, Logan Paul, who is, he's a social media sensation. I think that's kind of the most generous way to put it, who became a boxer, who is 0-1 in his boxing career after losing to another YouTuber, KSI, back in 2019. So the absurdity of all of that, Ben, the absurdity of this economy, what do you make of just how big a deal this is?
It is very weird and kind of surreal to see this, what's going on. And it's probably going to be one of the most lucrative events in combat sports in recent years. And then when you couple that between all the stuff outside of the ring, it's not hard to have internal conflict over kind of what's happening this weekend. But all of that being said, it is happening this weekend. And the fact that it is still just quite remarkable on several levels. When you look at what's going on here, I think it's a testament of anything else as to kind of the fact that these two guys have built a fan base and a brand so large that they're able to do this. And honestly, you have two villains going against each other.
These are kindred spirits, people who, as you report in your piece, who share a certain blueprint that had been constructed specifically by Floyd Mayweather. So the Mayweather blueprint, Ben, that has made him this degree of successful over the years, how would you characterize that?
Floyd Mayweather, you know, as good as he was in the ring, I would argue that his best asset and skill is really being able to self-promote and be marketable.
Every fight is the biggest fight of my career because I'm the king of the throne and everybody's trying to knock me off. To be the best, you got to beat the best, and I beat everybody put in front of me.
Floyd has a unique ability, a unique skill set to really be polarizing and to genuinely evoke emotion. And people usually, when he was a boxer and when he was still, you know, active in his career, many people bought his pay-per-views for one of two reasons. They either wanted to see him win or they wanted to see him lose. And more often than not, there were very few people who were in the middle or who were indifferent. And that's one of Floyd's greatest skills as well, is that he feels at home whenever, you know, he was in arenas and they were all booing. He was on press tours and the whole crowd was chanting against him, and he was the villain in the arena. You know, when it comes to selling pay-per-views, the most important thing is creating that emotional bond between fans and essentially people who are going to buy the pay-per-view. And if you can give them a reason to do that, if you can create that intrigue, that suspense, and really create some strong emotional attachment, there's a good chance that they will end up buying that fight.
So the people who don't remember what Floyd was like before he became Money Mayweather, how would you describe his persona, his character, how he sold fights at that stage of his career?
You know, I think at that point, when he was in, you know, especially in lower weight divisions, he was a former U.S. Olympian. A lot of people believe that, you know, he got robbed and ended up not winning the gold medal and was deserving. He was a very polished fighter, known as Pretty Boy Floyd, you know, never really got marked up. Floyd was a completely different guy. You know, I ended up pulling up one of the old press conferences off of YouTube after his fight with Zab Judah, where his uncle attacked Zab in the ring after Zab, you know, hit Floyd with repeated low blows. And I thought it was fascinating. I had never seen this quote before, where Floyd said it was important to be a gentleman in and out of the ring.
You got clean fighters, you got dirty fighters. I'm a gentleman, inside the ring as well as outside the ring. And that's what it's about, conducting yourself like a gentleman, because that takes you.
And if you really unpack that quote, what Floyd is saying at the time, this is the best way to really be a lucrative prize fighter. And prize fighting and being a boxer are almost two different things. I mean, you can be a great boxer, but you may not necessarily be a great prize fighter, because when you're a great prize fighter, there's a significant monetary value attached to that. We saw that starting with his De La Hoya fight in 2007. You know, he tried to get under De La Hoya's skin. You know, it's funny, when I was going back and doing the research, I watched the old HBO documentary series at 24/7. And in there, there was a scene where Oscar De La Hoya is really mad that Floyd stole his bag at some point during one of the press tours. And Floyd basically didn't deny it, and he more or less admitted to it. He did just about everything to kind of be polarizing in that fight. And that was the last fight he was introduced as Pretty Boy Floyd Mayweather. From then on, he was Money Mayweather. Money Mayweather was brash, was loud, boisterous, and he was unapologetic for all of it.
Hey, how you doing? I'm not no former number one pound for pound fighter. I'm just saying I'm the best fighter in the sport of boxing. No one has dethroned me, so how am I not pound for pound the best fighter in the world? You tell me. The sport needs the cash cow back, you know? We already know what I can generate. We already know what I can do in the sport, and we already know who's the face of boxing.
And really, when you see him transitioning into Money Mayweather, it really is an evolution of that mindset of him finally realizing this is what actually sells. And to Floyd's credit, he basically dictated the business terms the rest of his career after the De La Hoya fight, and never did anything he didn't want to do, was able to kind of craft the narrative around his career almost perfectly, ending with a 50-0 perfect record. And that last win was against Conor McGregor, who was making his boxing debut. I think it, you know, summed up Mayweather's career so well, in that his last fight was, you know, a glorified exhibition like we're seeing Sunday, and it ended up being one of the richest events that we've ever seen in boxing, and that's kind of, you know, embodied Floyd.
I can guarantee myself what, 35 million? I could guarantee myself 35 million. Eventually probably make probably 50 million, right? Just a regular fighter. Or I could, me and Logan Paul or a YouTuber, we can go out and entertain and have fun and make nine figures, 100 million or more.
Why fight Logan Paul?
Why not? I mean, like I just told you before, remember this, I got a sharp mind. I told you I was an entertainer. I'm not just a fighter, I'm an entertainer.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a coincidence, Ben, that Floyd turns heel and becomes synonymous with money right as America was plunging into the Great Recession. It's just a rebrand and a pivot that Jake and Logan Paul, I imagine, must respect as trolls themselves. And for the geriatrics, for the boomers among us, how would you describe how the Paul brothers even became famous? Where does their story start?
So it started out on Vine, an app where you filmed yourself in 6 seconds on your phone.
Hey, Logan.
Hey, Jake.
Hey, Logan.
Hey, what?
I need you.
Need me?
I need you.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
All right.
Bye, Logan.
Bye, Jake.
And they were teenagers at the time, and they eventually transitioned from Vine to putting out video blogs on YouTube.
Good morning, Logue Gang. I am currently on Hollywood Boulevard, and I know what you're thinking. Logues, Logie Dugs, why aren't you in your house shirtless like you normally are? I have an explanation.
And then amassing a base of millions of followers and really mastering the craft of social media.
So I need a new mattress. And I need to get rid of my current mattress, which is what today's vlog is about. Hashtag vlogging! We're getting rid of a mattress. What can we do? Why not light it on fire with my brother?
And really, when you look at it, you know, Logan and Jake Paul, you know, when they were teenagers, they were kind of building this brand like athletes build their skills at a young age, as teenagers, and develop them to maybe one day be professionals.
What's good, Lo Gang? Okay, this is a weird one. This is not clickbait. This actually happened. A lot of YouTubers do fake videos, and I've done, you know, my fair share of like fake or stage videos. This is not one of those.
Their personalities and this innate ability to be charismatic, to kind of build a fan base. They've been crafting this for so many years, and that is as much a skill as what Floyd Mayweather does in the ring. Mayweather's advisor and longtime manager, Leonard Ellerbe, said that the Pauls have essentially perfected the blueprint, and they've transitioned over into boxing, and we really haven't seen anybody do it as well as Logan and Jake Paul.
All right, Ben, after this break, what pay-per-view boxing and going viral have in common? So as amazingly dystopian and fascinating and morbidly curious all of this is, I do want to get serious here for a second, Ben, because the success that Mayweather and the Paul brothers have had in building their profiles, like the context, the darker context with all of this, is that these are not model citizens. It's very hard to feel good about rooting for any of them fundamentally. Can you tell us about the controversies, the legal issues that these guys, Mayweather and Jake and Logan Paul, have all been party to?
Yeah, you know, Floyd Mayweather, I think it's fairly well known, but just as a reminder, you know, he has a very lengthy history of gender violence and domestic violence to the point that he actually had a jail sentence in 2011 in regards to a domestic violence issue and had to serve actual jail time.
Mayweather was cuffed and escorted out of the courtroom by court marshals just a few minutes ago. He'll be taken to the Clark County Detention Center where he will remain for the next 87 days.
And then when he came back out, he kind of picked up where his career left off. But that was a conviction that he had, and he did have to serve jail time. Logan Paul had a controversy where he shot a video blog in a Japanese suicide garden.
But this morning, Logan Paul is in some hot water after he posted a video allegedly showing the body of a person who recently committed suicide. The video viewed over 6 million times in just 24 hours. It was part of a series Paul was posting from Japan.
A very controversial situation that ended up costing him financially and really hurt his image in a lot of different ways. And then just recently, Jake Paul has been accused of at least one sexual assault allegation. So all three of them separately have their own individual issues outside of the ring or outside of whatever it is, the way they make money. But these issues have not stopped any of them from making money thus far.
I'm looking, for instance, at their Wikipedia pages, Ben, at Jake Paul's, at Logan Paul's, and Floyd's. And these are the sorts of guys who have legal issues and controversies subsections that just keep scrolling through and they keep on going. And how have they been dealing with this in the promotion of this fight?
You know, what's fascinating, and it kind of speaks to the parallel between the Paul brothers and Floyd Mayweather, is that, you know, we saw in the Showtime documentary in the 30-minute special that they had, you know, previewing this event, you see Logan Paul and Floyd Mayweather on stage basically insulting each other about their respective, you know, personal problems, where you have Logan Paul saying that Floyd, you know, was beating his wife and things along those lines. Logan was referencing Floyd's domestic violence history and conviction, as we discussed. And then almost in the same breath, Floyd is also talking about Logan's point in which, you know, he had the incident in Japan. And they both are using this as a vehicle to sell this pay-per-view, which is kind of almost remarkable when you think about what is actually going on here, that they're using the lowest points in each other's lives, presumably, to make money off it for each other. And they both kind of know what's going on here. And it's just, it's part of the act. It's all part of what's occurring and kind of why they've been able to kind of make this money in over time. And it in a way says a lot of kind of about who they are.
The stunts, man, with the Paul brothers, they were on full display a couple weeks ago in Miami at the first news conference that was held to promote this fight. And again, Jake Paul, who is not the brother who is fighting Floyd this weekend, he went face to face with Floyd and stole his hat.
Got your hat.
And so this melee ensues, and Floyd is yelling, "Don't ever disrespect me like that."
Knock it off! Don't ever disrespect me. Arrest everybody here.
And it seems all pretty like volatile and verging on, oh, wait a minute, there's something dangerous going on here. All of which, in retrospect, felt so straight out of the WWE. So how do you see like pro wrestling bleeding into how boxing is operating today?
Boxing has always had these big characters and long before wrestling did, you've always had guys who were able to do this and do it well. And there is that kind of showmanship quality, the fact that it is a big drama. And for this fight specifically, and I feel weird even calling it a fight, even though they're hitting each other, I don't really know how much of a fight it's going to be.
No, this spectacle, this disgrace to some people's eyes, but this thing that we're gonna pay attention to.
Right, and the thing is, we already know, if we're trying to talk about the sporting qualities of this exhibition, I think it's pretty easy that, you know, we kind of have an understanding of what's going to happen, that whenever Floyd Mayweather decides he wants the night to be over, the night will be over. But that's when you're talking about a pay-per-view, you have to create this intrigue and give people a reason to tune in. Because obviously, you know, just putting these two guys against each other and saying, hey, go fight and let's see who wins, unless it's really, really elite fighters, and even in combat sports, that often isn't enough to sell, to be a lucrative to be a lucrative pay-per-view option for a one-night event. I mean, there's got to be something more to it. Think about this in boxing. You have so many champions. You have so many guys at all weight classes who truly are incredible. But very few guys ever ascend to pay-per-view stars because they just aren't as appealing as some of the other fighters. They aren't these big personalities that can drive revenue and drive tickets and drive pay-per-view purchases. And so, you know, when you look at all the spectacle that happened in Miami, it showed why this was a pay-per-view event.
That's where all of this is so fascinating in a morbid way to me. And this notion that you articulated so well, that clickbait is pay-per-view, that YouTubers inherently understand what it takes to make it in pay-per-view boxing. There's this inherent overlap in those sensibilities. YouTubers, it seems, are kind of born naturally to be pay-per-view stars.
Yeah, well, when you think about it, it's essentially what they've done to become YouTube stars in the first place. Think about the platform itself, YouTube, how long it's been around, how many options you have on that. If you really wanted to spend an entire 24 hours just looking at whatever, and I've procrastinated on plenty of stories, spending hours on YouTube and just going off on random tangents, watching cricket matches from a handful of years ago, old boxing events, how to do some home remodeling projects. I mean, I could watch literally whatever it is piques my interest. And these YouTube stars, what they've been able to do is build a personality so strong that they're able to cut through everything that is on that website, on that platform, and have people dedicated and that are going to watch all their stuff and subscribe. And they've already clicked that button to subscribe. And it's the same button. It's the same mechanism that you use when you click purchase when you're buying a pay-per-view. They've already created that feeling in these people. So they built that loyalty on the site, and they've been able to cut through the noise of the internet. And that's what makes that skill so transferable. The only way to refer to them, as stupid as it sounds to people of a certain age, I mean, it seems like they're just on the internet, kind of loafing around and kind of this picked up this following. I think there is a certain craft element to this, which is kind of, the geriatric boomers, a wonderful phrase to put it, because I'm starting to feel that creak in my bones as I refer to this as a skill, but I don't think there's any other way to describe it.
Yeah, and you could also argue that Floyd Mayweather was maybe like one of the original clickbait boxers.
And the reason why it worked for Floyd, and I think there is this level of separation that needs to occur here, is that the reason it worked for Floyd is that because he was so elite in the ring that nobody could really touch him. If Floyd ever lost, you know, the whole playbook falls apart. People have finally seen him lose and they are satisfied. That is the resolution that they have been looking for. The reason it worked for Floyd his entire career is because he never lost. And that every time you watched that fight, you felt that sense. If you bought it to watch him lose, guess what? The next time he fights, you still have that feeling. You know, Logan Paul is 0-1 here, and like this shtick is eventually going to run out for him. Eventually, people are going to get bored because they'll see him get pummeled enough times. And, you know, maybe they keep reinventing themselves and we go from there.
So as fans of the sweet science, fans of the romance of boxing, as they collapse under their fainting couches this weekend, Ben, what does this fight say about the state of boxing itself?
I think right now in the sport, we're seeing, you know, a lot of fights that fans want to see. They're just not being made because of the politics, either between the fighters or between networks or managers or all of the boxing shenanigans that we've seen for decades now. And then there's the other side of it where, you know, we have promoters like Eddie Hearn at Matchroom, like the folks at Showtime, who are hoping that these kind of spectacles are able to drive a younger audience that maybe has been lost over the last, you know, 15, 20 years, who don't really know what the sport is about, and maybe they like one of these YouTubers and they're able to maybe get some new fans in the sport and, oh, by the way, make a ton of money in a one-off night. So, you know, I think that's a big aspect of it. But what's fascinating about this as well is that just last month we saw Canelo Alvarez and Billy Joe Saunders put more than 70,000 people inside AT&T Stadium at the end of a pandemic, no less, and that set the record for the largest indoor crowd for a boxing event in North America, a record, mind you, that was held by Muhammad Ali. So we have two things working here. We have a sport that seems to be still very economically profitable, a thing that fans are still very interested in, and then also this sideshow that is going on at the same time, and they're more parallel than anything.
So with Floyd Mayweather validating the gold rush that has been YouTube boxing, where do you think this ends, Ben? Does it end on Sunday night?
I don't think so at all. I think that, to be honest, it may just be the first episode in potentially another one between Mayweather and the Paul brothers. In a Mayweather-Jake Paul fight seems very logical when we see the buildup and we see how good Jake has been in the ring. And if he's able to defeat Tyron Woodley and remain undefeated, that Mayweather-Jake Paul exhibition, even if it's not an official sanctioned bout like Jake Paul's other three fights, it still could be very lucrative. Lucrative to the point, and Pablo, I want you to wrap your mind around this. This could be potentially the biggest selling pay-per-view in the history of combat sports, in the history of boxing. And that is not hyperbole. And it just goes to show kind of how strong the bases are for those guys and how strong the hate is for each of them respectively. And all of that put together could end up producing something that honestly, I don't know if we've ever seen before.
Ben Baby, thank you for explaining the dystopian modern economy of boxing.
Thanks, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Andy Tennant, Eve Troh, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. Special thanks this week to Dave Saronic, Scott Sikowski, and Jackson Ogilo. I'll talk to you Monday.